Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And now we return to the life and legacy of Nelson Mandela with a call-in for African immigrants and anyone with ties to the African diaspora to discuss what Nelson Mandela meant to you. We're opening our phones for your tributes, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, on what Mandela meant not just to South Africa, but to other African countries as well, and maybe you as an individual who came from any other African country other than South Africa. 212-433-WNYC. And here's a little bit more audio of Nelson Mandela as your calls start to come in. Earlier, we played a clip of him in New York in 1990. Here he is from more than 25 years earlier in 1964 at what was really the start of the modern South African freedom movement. The audio is a little degraded, but listen close to a young Nelson Mandela.
I have cherished the idea of a democratic and free society in which all persons will live together in harmony and with equal opportunities. It is an idea for which I hope to live for and to see realized. But my Lord, if it needs be, it is an idea for which I am prepared to die.
It is an idea for which I hope to live for, an idea for which I am prepared to die, Nelson Mandela in 1964. So we're going to take calls from African immigrants and any other members of the African diaspora, anyone out there, about Nelson Mandela as early as 1964, when much of the continent was still under colonial rule. What did it mean to you to watch South Africa struggle through the lens of your own country's story, or post-1990 once he was released, or post-1994 when South Africa became a democracy? What did the legacy of Nelson Mandela and the struggle against apartheid mean to you in your other African country? 212-433-WNYC, and we'll take your calls right after this. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we're going to take calls from any of you who came from any African country other than South Africa on what the legacy and the life of Nelson Mandela meant elsewhere around the continent. And while your calls are coming in, we want to get a quick story about Nelson Mandela from 30 years after that 1964 clip that we just played before the break. Our friend Jamie Floyd, legal journalist, sometimes guest host for this program, emailed us this morning with a story of her own time in South Africa when she was part of a Clinton administration team helping to set up the new constitution there. Hey, Jamie, thanks for reaching out. How are you?
Hello, Brian.
So tell us about the work you did and how you actually came to meet Nelson Mandela.
Well, I had the opportunity to meet this man I'd admired all my life by virtue of my work in the White House, as you say. I joined the Clinton administration when I was still very young in 1993. I was in my 20s. And, of course, that was shortly after Mandela was freed in 1990. So it was quite overwhelming. And I'm sure the conversations that you're going to have with the callers will reflect some of my own experience from a very different perspective. But I know in talking to young people today that it's very difficult for anyone who was born at that time or since to really comprehend what a huge moment it was. I mean, those of us alive at the time, really many of us believed that he would never be freed. And it really was also not that long ago. most people were alive when apartheid was the law in South Africa. But then Mandela was freed, and amazingly, he was elected the first black president of South Africa. And at pretty much the same time, Clinton and Gore entered the White House, and the Clintons reached out immediately to Nelson Mandela. And we did make several trips to Africa, and I was working, Brian, specifically for Al Gore. And the first thing I did actually was to help prepare him for that trip to the inauguration of Mandela. And as you will recall, about 100, I want to say closer to 200 dignitaries from all over the world went to that inauguration in 1994. It was in the spring of 1994. And Hillary Clinton went as well. That was a big and heady moment for a young person like myself. But then in a much smaller and more intimate setting, I observed some of the drafting of the South African, what was then known as Interim Constitution of 1993. And so I went from a multitude of thousands to a very small, drab conference room in Pretoria, and then again briefly encountered Nelson Mandela in Pretoria. And that was part of a negotiating process between the ANC and the National Party.
And, of course, that moment when a country coming out of some kind of authoritarian rule drafts its constitution is so pivotal. We see the halting steps toward that in Egypt right now, for example.
Absolutely.
And one of the reasons that Mandela is sometimes called the George Washington of South Africa is because, like George Washington in this country, he wanted to make sure that there was a democratic succession, that he didn't become, in effect, the king by force of his personality and his reputation. Right?
Yes, and he made it very clear at that inaugural in May of 1994 that he did not intend to be president indefinitely, and he made it very clear in that constitutional process, and the two negotiating parties were the ANC, which had been so pivotal in the struggle against apartheid, and the National Party, but it was very clear that the constitutional document would be central to the democracy, as it was in our country, and we had the lessons of so many other democracies that South Africa relied upon. And the South African Constitution, I commend it to our listeners, is a fine document. It is I think, a beacon to the world of democracies, though South Africa continues to struggle economically and with its growing democracy. It is a wonderful, wonderful document, and I think they were able to take a lesson from us. Again, I met Nelson Mandela when we took a trip to Zimbabwe, Malawi, Botswana, and you're going to have callers, I hope, from all of those countries.
And Jamie, I got to go and take those callers in just a sec, but I just have to ask you, for journalists like you and me, we can get pretty jaded about meeting all these famous people who we have the privilege of coming up against. And there may not be that many who would kind of give us chills. But I've never been in the same room as Nelson Mandela.
Yeah.
I would barely be able to breathe if I had been. What was it actually like for you?
I'm so glad you asked that question, Brian, because he was absolutely incomparable. And that is the only thing I can really add to what everyone else is saying today. It's the context that I can give, because I have had the privilege of meeting every living president, secretaries of state, leaders of other countries, et cetera, luminaries from so many fields. And I can honestly say that none of them compares to Nelson Mandela. He said, Brian, man's goodness is a flame that can be hidden but never extinguished. And even if it's that, even if that is true for all of us, in Nelson Mandela, that flame burns more brightly than in anyone else I've ever met.
Jamie Floyd, what a great contribution to our show today. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian.
Audrey in Carmel, originally from Liberia. Audrey?
Yes, I am. Hi, Brian.
Hi.
I was born in Liberia, but I grew up for several years in Kenya as well.
Uh-huh.
So, I have a very intense connection to Nelson Mandela because my father, who was an Episcopal priest, introduced me to the name of Nelson Mandela. My dad was very involved in the ecumenical movement in Africa, especially in the context of African independence and challenging the African churches to lobby for independence in Angola and Mozambique, Rhodesia, which we now call Zimbabwe, and, of course, in South Africa. So we had many South African liberation leaders, including Bishop Desmond Tutu, in our home very many times. So for as long as I can remember, I've heard about Nelson Mandela and his efforts to bring freedom to black South Africans. In fact, I remember when the Soweto uprising occurred in 1996, when many black youth were killed.
But what did it mean to Liberia? That's what I want to know.
What did it mean to Liberia? I mean, he was an icon, I think, for the entire African population. I mean, to be growing up in Africa in the 1970s, when many African countries were becoming independent, many African leaders, I think, strived to combat colonialism the way Nelson did and emulate his model. And I mean, I think in Liberia, you know, people and many of the leaders there looked up to him. Unfortunately, that's a country that has gone through a horrific civil war, and you know what the model that Mr. Mandela set out for many African leaders has not been followed.
And Audrey, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you so much for your call. Enza in Brooklyn, originally from Uganda. Enza?
Yes, Brian. First time calling, but long time listener.
Thank you.
And I grew up in Uganda during that time. There was a lot of all this freedom fighting. And so above all those more noble causes was Mandela's cause. And listening to the 1998 video of all the bands trying to get Mandela out of prison, so this was somewhat like the end of an era for me for my 1980s, if to think of it like that.
Thank you very much. And Ted in Trenton, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ted. Originally from Nigeria.
That's correct. Hi. I was born right in the midst of Nigerian civil war, basically at a time when a lot of leaders in Nigeria were seen to be squandering resourceful time away. And we basically, as kids, we heard about this wonderful great gentleman who was in jail in South Africa. And we were concerned that even if he got out of jail, one, we believed that he would never get out of jail. We were concerned that even if he got out of jail, he probably would end up being killed or not even being of any use to his country. We were amazed when he finally got out of jail, and he united this country in a manner never known to anyone. And of course, that served as inspiration for the rest of us that there is actually a light at the end of the tunnel for Nigeria.
Thank you so much, Ted. There's how Nelson Mandela inspired Nigeria despite the problems there. And Adina in Irvington, you're on WNYC. Hi, Adina.
Hi, Brian. How are you? Thanks for having me again.
Thanks for calling.
It's Adina from IHOP.
I remember your calls from the IHOP in Irvington, yes.
Yes, Brian. I think today is a sad day, but a day to celebrate as well. I think being from Liberia and going through a civil war and losing some family member that died, and I've always looked to Nelson Mandela to say you have to find in your heart to forgive people, because once you do forgive, that's when you can grow as a person. So I have taken that and, tried to kind of cleanse my system in terms of losing family members from the civil war that happened in Liberia. But also look into it as how we as young Africans in America can look back and make the changes that Nelson Mandela talked about back in our homes. So it's a sad day, but a day to celebrate and to reflect on our own lives and how we can make other people's lives better and just, move on from tragedy.
Just tell me, Adina, which is better at your IHOP, the double blueberry or the chocolate chip?
Double blueberry.
Oh, okay.
Always.
We've got that on good authority. Adina, keep calling us. Thank you very much. Tedla in Flushing, originally from Ethiopia. Hi, Tedla.
Yes, good morning, Brian. Ethiopia is a very special place for Mandela historically, because Ethiopia is the first country under Haile Selassie who tried to train Mandela as a guerrilla fighter. When Mandela is a free man, it is the first country he visited is Ethiopia. So we Ethiopians have intimate relationship with Mandela. But unfortunately, Mandela's preaching of reconciliation and forgiveness was not learned by African brutal dictators all over the place. From Rwanda, genocide happens during Mandela time, Darfur during Mandela time, Somalia, Ethiopia. Unfortunately, the African people have learned the lesson of Mandela. If blacks and whites resolve their difference, how comes we Africans are killing each other because of ethnicity? So unfortunately, his legacy for us, it was not a London legacy. We failed ourselves, and unfortunately, Mandela, when he passed away, God bless his soul, he is sad on what is going on in Africa. We are very lost. We lost a great man. Africa has now no symbol and no leader. Very sad for all of us.
Ted, thank you so much, despite the discouraging message. And Namsa, originally from Zimbabwe, is going to get our last minute here. Hi, Namsa. Thank you very much for calling in.
Hi, Brian. I'm calling because when Mandela was released in 1990, he came to Zimbabwe, and he was at the University of Zimbabwe. And as children, we were 12 years old at the time. We prepared a skit for him, and he was running late. He was being ushered out, and we ran to him and asked, please, can we do this for you? And he looked at us, and he looked at his people, and he said, the children are more important. I mean, with a voice like that, you're destined for greatness, right? We did the skit, we hugged him afterwards, and it was just such a profound moment for me because Mandela's main message to me was that black Africans had dignity, and it was such an important message to get a hold of, especially at that time in Zimbabwe. We had just been 10 years into our own independence, and so we were still struggling with that as well, so it was a very important, profound time.
Namsa, thank you very much. And thanks to all of you from all over Africa for calling from here in New York, now that you're here, and the greater New York area, about what Nelson Mandela meant to your country of origin. By the way, folks, we found a blog post this morning from someone who helped lead the struggle for independence in Malawi, where he too was imprisoned for decades. It's an incredible post, and we recommend you to our website, wnyc.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show to read that. And thanks for listening today. Have a great weekend. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.